Hey there, before we get started on this week's episode, I would love to ask for your support by reviewing this podcast. We want to share yoga with as many people as possible, and this free resource, this podcast, is one of the ways that we can do that. And the best way that you can help support us is by giving us a review. So if you go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever podcast platform you use, scroll down until you find that star review and then give us some love. Thank you so much, and let's get started with this week's episode.
Hello and welcome back to the Going Pro Yoga Podcast. Today's episode is a continuation from last week where we had Vijeth Kumar come to the podcast and speak about yogi mindset. And now for this week, we're continuing that episode. We actually split it into two. It was a long conversation, so we split it into two. So if you're listening to this one for the first time, go back one. Go back one to tune into the first part of the yogi mindset, where in this episode, we're actually going to be continuing the conversation and talking more about integration of the niyamas and the yamas. So yogic philosophy, because when learning yoga philosophy, while it is fascinating and interesting, it's also somewhat overwhelming at the same time for some to be able to understand how to actually use and interpret this information of what the niyamas and the yamas teach us to live a more yogic lifestyle, more peaceful lifestyle, more blissful lifestyle, or a stress-less lifestyle. So again, Vijeth has been graciously able to simplify the teachings of what he's learned from his teachers and his experience, and he also brings in a lot of the lessons that he learned from his grandparents, bhakti yogis, for love and devotion. So really excited to continue this conversation. Without further ado, let's dive back in to the conversation with Vijeth Kumar.
Welcome to the Going Pro Yoga Podcast. If you love yoga as much as I do, then this podcast is for you. We talk all things yoga related for teachers in order to supplement and complement and even support after a 200-hour yoga teacher training. Or if you've never done a training before, this podcast is all about just learning more about yoga in an authentic way. Together with Paul Teodo and Byron de Marseille, we put together this podcast to provide you with a free resource to learn more about yoga. Whether you want to share yoga or teach yoga or just practice yoga, this podcast is talking all things yoga related. And we're trying to talk from the teacher's perspective and also the student's perspective to make sure we get a full 360-degree angle on what yoga is all about and how it's evolved in the modern world. Welcome to our podcast.
I'm going to throw you off a little bit here because I know you're going to answer the question in a different way, but if you had to say, what is your favorite?
I think I have, both have helped me a lot in my practice, but niyamas are my favorite.
Niyamas is your favorite. Yeah. Is there a particular one?
It is Ishvara Pranidhana.
Okay.
It is the act of devotion. That is something that I grew up with, watching my grandparents, parents, deeply immersed in Bhakti Marga. So even through the practice to ultimately find the same experience is something very profound for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it teaches you how to do surrendered action, where every act is done in such a way that your energy in the being is felt, it is moving towards the heart core, to the heart center.
Mm. So a bhakti yogi is a yogi who, I don't know how to say this, you can correct what I say, but it's devotion, yeah? It's love and devotion as a bhakti yogi, or there. That's what would be my translation, I suppose. But what would you say?
I will say that a bhakti yogi is the one who has deep trust in the divine. A bhakti yogi is the one who can recognize the divine everywhere. And The whole Indian tradition is about being in bhakti. When we do namaste, it simply says that I clearly see myself in you. Whatever that is keeping me alive is the same energy which is keeping you alive. So it is like a constant reminder that you are not separate from the cosmos. You are it. So bhakti helps us to experience that oneness. All the separation dissolves. And bhakti is also feeling that the only relationship that you have is with the Divine Mother, the cosmic energy. So everything is her reflection, her expression. So you are in that state of pure love. And the more you are in that cosmic love, the more is being overflowed from your being. That's why bhakti yogi is always in ecstatic state. They sing, they dance. Mm. So that is the rasa of the bhakti, celebration. So the Ishvara Pranidhana say the best way to practice yoga is to celebrate your life.
I can see why that's your favorite. That's great. And I remember something that you've said before that really landed with me, and I'm just going to say it, and I'm sure you can probably say more about it. I don't even know if it was on the last podcast or not, but I've heard you talk so many times in trainings that I just was something that landed with me one time, and it's talking about the act of devotion and how what you're devoted to is somewhat irrelevant. It's more the act or the feeling of the devotion or the act of devoting yourself to something, regardless if it's this table or if it's Ganesha or if it's Allah or Jesus, right? It's just the devotion, the act of it being more the power or the essence of it.
Yeah, it is more about how you do it than what you do. It's to do things with love. To make it very simple, it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita and other yogic scriptures that you go into the world not to extract happiness. You go into the world because you want to share your happiness. So you're doing everything because you are full of love and happiness. You're not doing things because you want to extract something out of what you're doing. So whenever there is this yearning to have more, we are not in our center. Because in love, you don't rule, you serve. In love, doing the service gives you the greatest joy. Because you have so much love happening in you, overpouring from you, you just want to share it. It is a human tendency. So, act of surrender is this, that you only recognize this divine nature of love in you. And you know that love is not something that I have to go and get it somewhere. It is my nature. I never lose it, and I'll never go empty. And you keep giving and giving and giving. You're pouring everything that you have. But simultaneously you notice you're constantly receiving as well. So So when you do something with the bhakti, it becomes prayer. It is a way of conveying your gratitude. So then every act becomes an offering, and every act becomes the expression of love, expression of creativity.
You make it sound so simple. The behavior, the reminder, the offering of love or happiness, or it's, yeah, the extracting or receiving part is, I think, generally the focus, or it can be the focus for a lot of people, and not realizing that the outward energy has a byproduct or a result of having an inward, like a returning or like a receiving at the same time, versus focusing on the receiving, when it doesn't always work. And it's kind of like where people get blocked, I would say, is focusing on the want and the take versus the being of service or the outward share. And it makes me think of things like abundance. I don't know how aware you are of the conversations that people have about abundance, but the mindset of abundance is to, the more you give, the more you will receive. And usually this is used in the context of money, of course, because people are thinking about money. I need money to live. And especially, you know, inflation and all these things, like living in this material world, money is a very important thing. So how do I move from being scarcity mindset, where especially if I have a lineage, or not even a lineage, but a family who grew up in a time where there was war, and, you know, anything that you can take for survival was like, it's kind of, you just hold on to everything you have. So that's scarcity mindset. So taking, wanting for survival. And then, you know, a lot of us now, I would say in the newer generations, a lot of that coming from baby boomers and before. So newer generations are now trying to heal from or let go of some of these, call them samskaras, that was received from our parents and our grandparents, related to needing to take and collect and hold on to, as opposed to giving and letting go, which results in that return action of receiving at the same time. I don't know if this is making any sense, but to me, it's very much just trying to relate it back to the challenges that people face with some of these concepts. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a great question and a great comment as well. So the first thing we need to understand is when we start to meditate, in the beginning we need a lot of effort, right? The mind is racing, you're getting easily distracted, but you're consistent in your practice, you do every day. And suddenly one day, you are not really expecting anything to happen in your practice, but you had a very profound awakening. You explored something within you which was never being felt. And it has remained with you throughout the day. And from here on, the practice doesn't need any effort, because now you trust in the process you're in, because you know that you had a glimpse. So the moment there is glimpse of what is your inner potential, what is your true nature, even for a microsecond, everything shifts in you. Now, even without your own consent, your eyes wants to look within, wants to close whenever there is moment where you're not doing anything. You're not even setting up time for your meditation practice. You feel like you're never coming out of the practice. It keeps taking you back. So, the ego cannot let it go at the very beginning, resists so much because it takes your energy outward. This, what you're looking for, exists somewhere outside of you. And that is the reason we all come into yoga, so that we have these tools, have this moment to see that how abundant you are. You don't lack anything. But it is not realized. Hence the confusion for most of us.
Very nice. Not realizing the abundance that already exists. And not necessarily needing to get more. It's already there. So giving out the abundance only increases the abundance within.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yes.
Well said.
Okay. It's a different way of, for me, visualizing or the perspective of it compared to what I hear and what people say about abundance. Just give your money away and more money will come in, or you know, the more love you give, the more love you'll receive. So harder to digest, I guess, for some people. But then I also think of things like how people who are more, they are very focused on giving. You know, they give their time, their energy, their love, their, you know, you could even call them people pleasers, right? And then oftentimes the result or the consequence for them often can be fatigue, or they're, you know, it's like the quote of, or not the quote, but the saying of like their cup is they're giving from an empty cup because they're not being filled, fulfilled. So do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a great question again. It is a human tendency that we want the assurance of the other. And deep inside our heart, we have the intention to be there for who is in need of us, that we cannot tend to ignore. And when you are in the path of service, especially to be a yoga teacher, is a great responsibility, right? That you are holding space for people who are releasing their karmic ties. And when you are going into that space, if you enter there as Michael, is a problem. Because Michael also has set of problems. You are working on it. As Vijay, I have my own challenges, I'm working on it. And when you go there and you hold space, then what happens is you feel very limited. You feel very drained. Because you have to console the one who is in front of you, and also console yourself. Mm. Right? But if you can step aside and say that I go and I pray, let something guide me. Let something fill me up with so much energy. And if you do that act with devotion, you will notice your energy level will continue to stay up. Because something in life cosmically designed that eventually made you as a yoga teacher and placed you in front of people who were looking for spiritual growth. Even though you might feel that you have studied yoga and become a teacher, but to be in that place is a blessing. There is something working through you. Why did you had the desire to be a teacher, that to be of yoga? Why you want to help people? So there is a divine guidance flowing through us, the divine energy flowing through us. And once you're connected to that, then you are not feeling tired, exhausted to hold space for anyone. So that's why it is, when I see Gurujis that I studied with, they all had this kind of unconditional love, right? You are in their class and you say, my neck is hurting. They come to you, start massaging your neck, release it straight away.
The teachers?
The teachers.
Really?
Yeah. And you say, I'm hungry. They bring you the food. They're giving you already such a precious knowledge. So much growth is happening. And at the same time, they're constantly looking out ways to serve you. And that is something that each one of us have it. When we have so much love, of course, body will feel tired, but your energy level continue to stay up. You don't feel drained because you are connected to that cosmic energy.
Mm.
So if I'm not feeling in this way, is also not a big mistake. It's just that you need to have a balance. Give space and time, and that gentleness that you're offering to the people around you in your practice when you meditate. And this shift is going to happen sooner. Once the meditation starts to continue to exist in you, that state of awareness, now energy level is always high.
Hmm.
A yogi is so centered that he doesn't need to sleep. He's in a meditative state. We all need sleep because we get tired, exhausted by evening. We live in a stressful state. That's why sleep is essential. But if you need live in a meditative state, or if you meditate more, I've heard people who have attended Vipassana meditation, when they practice for 8 hours, 9 hours, they notice they cannot sleep longer in the night.
Mm-hmm.
So your energy level is directly related to your state of mind. So if the mind is overused, you feel tired. If body is overused, you will feel tired. There is a balance. So you keep the practice and you always make sure that you also take care of yourself in your practice so that you can serve better. There is this misconception also that you always have to take care of yourself. Yeah, self-care has become a very important thing in the modern world, but sometimes it's hard to decide whether you are taking care of the self or you're self-centric.
Mm.
Right? So to constantly to be in balance is yoga. Neither you go into that extreme where you feel that you're drained, or you don't go to that extreme where you don't care for others at all. You're always obsessed with your own state of mind, peace of mind. And you're always on guard. So it is somewhere between where you have the balance, and eventually with the grace you will continue. If your intention is to serve, you will continue to find more energy in you.
So in simple terms, I hear, or at least for my brain, maybe some other brains, is to be open, but to also have boundaries at the same time. So open with...
As long as you need boundaries.
As long, yeah. As long, I was thinking you were going to say something like that. Because because you said a lot of beautiful things about just like, you know, the stress in the body, which is what requires us to heal or rejuvenate or to sleep and rest. But if, you know, getting to this point or this stage, or at least the goal is to move towards that direction of less stress, I think everyone can relate to that, right? Less stress and more bliss, if you will. So that openness that over time, you say it eventually, like not needing boundaries, but like I think for most people, they do need boundaries. right? Especially for those that give, and always say yes, and they want to please, and they want to live up to expectations, and they want to, you know, you also said very subtly, like, do these things and get this validation back at the same time, which all this stuff is not really centered from just giving or being of service wholly. And that being somewhat draining and exhausting. And so therefore some boundaries, I suppose, whether it be just for personal time, for self-care, is something that a lot of people actually struggle with just by itself, is creating their own boundaries because they're so open. But their openness is also focused on self-centered things, like the way that they think about me, or the way that they see me, or, oh, they're not going to like me because they wanted this of me and I didn't do that thing, so I didn't live up to the expectation, so there's disappointment there. So I'm just thinking all of these, this is all just stress. It's just all different types of stress, right?
Yes.
So it's fun. It's kind of fun for me, but it's interesting to like just take apart, like, what is, you know, the human, modern human mind, like, has a lot of these things to process. And when I talk to you and I hear the way that you simplify some of these concepts, it's so beautiful. But then I just think of the person that struggles with, like, well, how do I do that? Like, what do I do? Like, how do I let go of these things? And how do I, you know, not be as stressful? And how do I not, you know, give fully without also, you know, receiving? And I think I know what you're going to say, but it's to keep practice. Just keep practicing.
Yes.
And just keep going. And then slowly things will change and shift eventually. There'll be a creative.
Yeah. Another difference. Important thing to understand is through practice, you are not going to be totally free of these things that is bothering you.
Right.
It will still exist. Because it is the part of your being. But what you can do with the practice is, when it arises, you can laugh about it, right? People actually take so much of stress. They do certain practices and they think that they're going to completely let go of this emotion,
right,
or a pain that they hold on to, or if it is a trauma. But it will all be in us. But through the practice, what happens is, you don't get influenced by it anymore. It just sits there as a factual memory, as information. This has happened. So if we are hoping that I'll do yoga for some years and then one day I'll not have any anger, that person will be disappointed, because still we'll see the anger in us, but you will have the ability not to react to this emotion. So we are not really here to get rid of anything. We are here to celebrate everything,
yeah,
all emotions.
Accept and celebrate. I think of, like, I'm always thinking of lines of nervous, like the nervous system. I have this visual, and if you've studied with me, you know what I'm talking about when I talk about the polyvagal theory, where it's like arousal or stimulation levels. You know, when your arousal or your stimulation or stress or adrenaline goes high, you know, that can eventually lead to imbalance, anxiety. Or if your stimulation is low, your arousal is low, that can also be out of balance, which would result in more of like depressive or uninspired or unmotivated type symptoms. So having your energy or your excitement level be balanced somewhere in the middle. And I think we talked about this the other day, actually, you and I, about trying to maintain that level. You know, call it reaction, but to me, it's the nervous system. Does the nervous system spike in moments of exhilarated excitement or anxiety or drop, versus trying to maintain this kind of wave? And if I think of like an example of like an ocean or surfing and stuff like that, like there's always waves. The waves don't go away, right? So the waves all exist. But can we calm the waves down so that they're not white caps, so they're not peaking so intensely, which makes the ocean seem stressful. The ocean has got so much energy. It's moving all over the place. It's almost chaotic. Versus like the waves are never going to go away. They're always going to be there. But sometimes there's smaller waves. So what I'm, I don't know if this is making any sense, but in my brain, I'm thinking of like the practice allows us to turn the large waves into smaller waves over time.
Definitely.
But the waves are always going to be there.
Yeah.
That's the way that my brain is
definitely
visualizing it. Right. So even when moments, it's like, you know, and it could take however long it takes. It takes how long it needs to until it gets to a point. But the waves are always underneath the surface. There's always certain energy that can bump up or bump down. But it's maintaining a relatively middle ground or balance. If you can see me on the video, I'm kind of like doing a little fish thing. But basically not too high, not too low, but somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just the yoga.
Yeah, that's yoga. It's as simple as that. The waves of an ocean. I mean, we are the drops, aren't we? Just a drop. So this has been really interesting, and we kind of just went from one thing to the next. But we're really just talking about these lifestyles of the niyamas in this case, particularly the one that's was your favorite. I can't even know how to pronounce it.
Niyamas.
No, your favorite niyama.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
Yeah, that one. Ishvara Pradhyanama.
Ishvara.
Ishvara.
Prani.
Prani.
Dana.
Dana.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got it.
Yeah, I got it. I passed. Okay, good. So I know that you have a retreat in Laos, which is in Southeast Asia, just north of Thailand. Mm-hmm. Where in Laos?
It's Nam Khan.
Namhanad. So you have a retreat. That's okay. You have a retreat there that you're doing with Anand, is that right?
Yeah.
With your wife.
Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit about it, because it's about learning more about the niyamas, yeah?
It is, usually with my own practice and teaching, I've come to this point where I understand that each one of us, when we learn about yamas and niyamas, like you said, that we want to integrate that into our life. So in this retreat, I'm focusing more on giving tools, how they can work on integrating these niyamas into their daily life. How to do the surrendered action in every moment of our life. And also give them yogic practices, because when you study classical texts on Hatha Yoga, they give you specific practices to let you know what exactly means saucha is, to cleanse, when you do the kriyas. In the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, they talk about shat kriyas, through which you can actually see that how by bringing up the purity of the body, of removing the excess leshma impurity from the body, changes the state of mind. So you witness it when you do these practices and you understand saucha that is mentioned in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. So this retreat is an opportunity to experience why niyamas are so profound. How that it can bring such a sudden shift in the way we live. How it can purify our perception. And also at the same time, it is to be connected with the nature. Most of the learning happens when you are available to the nature around you. So in this retreat, it is kind of bringing the yogic wisdom and staying connected with the nature. And also particularly Laos is a place where Buddhism is widely practiced. So you live in an atmosphere where meditation is happening around you.
Mm.
So that is a conducive atmosphere. At the same time, niyamas is all about how you can be available so that you can help yourself. Eventually, through the practices, you're using practices only as excuse. Ultimately, who is going to help you is yourself.
Hmm.
It's just an excuse. You spend time doing something, but you get to heal yourself, you get to help yourself, you get to guide yourself. And these 5 days is an opportunity even for me to go into that aspect where I can get to learn more about myself and deepen my practice.
When is it? When is the retreat?
It's happening from May 23rd to 29th.
May 23rd to May 29th. Okay. We're going to put this in the show notes for people to find if you're interested. To go to Laos. Maybe you're traveling around right now and you're like, oh, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? I want to do something different. Maybe I want to study more philosophy. Maybe you've never been to Laos. Maybe you want to spend more time in nature, find more peace, or just integrate some of the teachings that you've learned in one of your trainings.
It's most importantly, the yogic retreats that happens in India is so different.
Mm.
Nowadays, the retreat is being thought of. You go and relax and rejuvenate, come back new. This is a very traditional type of retreat where you go to have more tools to help yourself. So it is more like to really see that spiritual growth, to put all the energy that you have committed to see more gifts in you. Right? So when you go there, it becomes more like a sadhana, spiritual sadhana, than a retreat.
And just in case someone doesn't know what a sadhana is, how would you describe that?
Sadhana is wholeheartedly with devotion, you practice.
Yeah, practice.
You practice until practice becomes you.
Hmm.
That is the attitude of a sadhaka. That the perfection comes in practice where the effort becomes effortless. There is no need to put effort anymore to keep your spine erect. There is no more effort to breathe deeply. So you reach to that state of effortlessness. But a sadhaka has to put a lot of effort in the beginning to experience effortlessness.
Right.
Yeah.
A little bit at a time, one day at a time,
yeah.
One moment at a time, if possible. That sounds great. I would actually love to go on that retreat if I wasn't teaching so much in May. I think I'm teaching in 8 trainings in May, which is crazy. I know I'm going to be giving a lot, so that also means I'm going to be receiving a lot if I'm in the right place with my mindset. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a great precursor for me to prepare myself for that month. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vijeth. It's always beautiful to have you on. I know this is the second time. This will be the third because we'll probably split this episode into two. For the audience, this will be the third time you'll be on. It's a pleasure to have you and to be so grateful to learn from what your teachers and your life experience and your grandparents have taught you. Because it comes through to me very, very wholeheartedly, very true, very authentic. And I think that's really valuable, especially because in this podcast, authenticity is like our number one value. And casual is the other one. If you haven't figured that out, we're very casual for the most part. And then also trying to keep things simple for the modern world, the modern mind, the modern body. So that even though yoga, this practice that's been around for many, many years, you know, it can help to allow us to understand how we can evolve as well, even with, you know, the times and things, the different stresses, the different things that are going on in the world. While they're different, they're also still somewhat the same. So it's nice to have conversations like this to kind of evolve some of these concepts, right? Especially with so many people who are studying yoga now. It seems more so in the last, you know, since like two decades ago, at least in the Western world. I can't speak for India, of course, right? So bringing that and allowing that to spread to different people is just, I think it's such a blessing. So I'm just basically saying a lot of words to say thank you again. So thank I really you so appreciate much. You. Yeah. Yeah. And I'd love to have you back as always. And I'm sure our audience would as well. Do you have any final thoughts, final words that you'd like to share with our audience before we let them go?
I want to convey my gratitude to you also. Always when we come together, we end up talking so deep about the subject. And it's a great reminder for me to be in your presence also, to always contemplate on the subject. And always you take me to places and ask me the right questions actually, which are very helpful. And I really love sharing this, my guru's teaching, and also offering it in such a way that each one of us feels that it is the most simple thing to do. You don't need to be a great aesthetic to do the practice of yoga. Just principle, if you understand the principle of yoga, you don't need to change a thing about your life and still you can be a very devoted practitioner of yoga. So making it more simple is the way to progress in the path. And I'm very happy to share my practice and my experience and my guru's teaching whenever I can. That's what my guru said, keep serving. The more you serve, the more you get equipped with better wisdom.
And then you have more to share.
Yeah.
And it just continues. That's like the giving and the receiving.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the perfect accumulation of today's or this these podcast episodes. Thank you. I feel very enlightened. Even though it is like 9 o'clock at night right now, it doesn't feel like it. I feel actually quite energized. I feel very alive. So, yeah, thank you everyone for tuning in and listening.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always great to just have you talking about these things. So I'm excited for the next time, but I'll also be patient and wait. And also just having conversations. I love spending time with you. So I'll say that. Thank you again, everyone. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us at podcast@goingproyoga.com. We'll also put maybe Instagram is the best way. Yeah. We'll put Instagram, Vijay's Instagram there if you'd like to connect. And then maybe some information about the retreat as well, which is in May 23rd to the
29th.
To the 29th in Laos, to learn more about integrating the niyamas in your life, which is, yeah, sounds extremely exciting. All right. Thank you so much, Vijay. Thank you, everyone. And we'll speak to you next week. Take care. All right. Before you go, let me just tell you about the goingproyoga.com platform. So right now you can go to goingproyoga.com and check it out for free for 7 days, where you can actually learn more about yoga in the ways of alignment, cueing, sequencing, yoga anatomy. So that if you've done a 200-hour teacher training and you want to continue to learn, practice, and grow, this platform is definitely for you. So I definitely suggest checking it out. Goingproyoga.com. Right now you can try it out for free for 7 days.